Welcome back to another episode from the Outfitters Connection podcast. This week we have a good friend of mine on. His name's Colton Bender with Barebone Skullworks. How's it going, Colton?
Get about yourself, man.
I'm doing good, brother. And that's for the listeners that can't really see, Colton's got a really cool wall behind him. He's got like a red fox, a coyote, a whole bunch of sheds, and then a very special animal to both him and I that we'll get a little bit into here in a little bit. But man, like, how you been? It seems like you've had a really good hunting season this year.
I have, yeah. We've been off to a good start for the 2024 season already. Just got back from a 2.5 week trip. We hit Arizona and Texas, went and shot a couple javelina in Arizona, and we went and hit a couple friends' ranches in Texas and hung out and helped them work, and then went over to the 6S River Ranch and got to go hunt my dream animal and got this Markhor here with my bow.
That's such like to get a Markhor is one thing, right? But to get one with your bow, it's just that extra little notch in somebody's belt. God, Markhor are they're just beautiful animals. There's nothing you could even compare them to, really. I mean, they're that neat, that unique, that wild looking.
Yeah, they are. There's really nothing that even compares to them. They're
No,
their own
and
special animal, that's for sure.
oh, absolutely. And that has been something that's been a bucket list item since you were a kid. When did you first like kind of put that idea together that you wanted a Markhor at such a young age?
Man, I couldn't even tell you I've wanted one ever since I really knew what they were. And I never even would have dreamed that I'd be able to hunt one, let alone get to go bow hunt one. So it's pretty cool.
Right. Because like if you're hunting them like in their native ranges of Pakistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, those areas, they're very elusive animals there, and then you put them on a ranch in Texas, and it becomes just as difficult when you add in the archery aspect. How was your hunt with success?
It was a blast. Shane, the owner, he was awesome to deal with. And then our guide, Tyler, he was very hospitable. He made us feel right at home. It was like going hunting with a friend that we'd known forever.
That's one thing I've always enjoyed about that ranch is they've always taken care of anybody and everybody as if they were family, which is like it's almost what you want in every ranch that you go to go hunt is a ranch where you're welcome in with open arms. You're treated as if you've been there 100 times, even if it was your first time.
Oh, absolutely. As soon as we rolled through the gate, it felt like we'd been there multiple times before and it was our first trip there.
And it's, dude, that ranch is like, it's a beautiful place. It's kind of tucked off, you know, it's close to town, but at the same time you still feel like you're out in the middle of nowhere there. And it's got different terrain features. The lodging is super nice. Their blinds are awesome, and it's just one of those places like whenever you go there, you're just like, man, this is how it's supposed to be every time.
Yeah, and it's cool. They got the creek and the river that runs through there, all the hills and river bottom. We were there the middle of February and it was as green as could be. You would have thought it was, April or May.
Right. Yeah, because and they had just had some rain. Oh, back in February, late early February, late January, somewhere in there, I believe. And whenever that place gets rain, man, it almost instantly greens up and it just turns into this beautiful countryside. Like anybody that's looking for a hunt,
It
I highly recommend them just because the amenities, the scenery, the animals, they have a pretty wide range of variety of animals too.
yeah, they do. We saw ibex, markhor, some red stags, axis deer, nilgai, some sika deer, zebra. And I'm sure I'm missing a few, but yeah, we saw all sorts of animals and lots of real nice animals as well.
They've always done really well taking care of like their trophy class animals, you know, and ensuring that you're shooting a nice, mature, good representative of the species, as well as being like a great trophy that you're going to be happy to hang on your wall.
Oh,
What
absolutely.
kind of drew you, aside from like always wanting one as a kid, but like what got you started in the outdoor world? Like when did you start hunting? When did you start like really finding this passion of yours?
I grew up hunting with my dad and grandpa ever since I can remember. And in Montana, I couldn't hunt big game. till I was 12. So I grew up, waiting and watching dad going with him all the time. He couldn't leave the house without me. And then when it finally come my turn, it was even worse. And so I grew up rodeoing, and once I got old enough where I could really start hunting hard, I hung up the bull rope pretty quick and quit riding bulls and just went full time hunting. It's been my passion ever since I can remember.
Awesome. Yeah, it's so I've got like a semi similar deal there. Whenever I started hunting, it was following my dad and my grandpa around with the rabbit dogs, chasing rabbits on the family's, little farm that we had in Missouri. And then it just kind of slowly progressed and evolved and then turned into a full-time career, in my late 20s, I guess late 20s is when it started. And then it's just kind of it's really consumed me as a person because I can't picture doing anything else. It's once it gets in your blood, it's there to stay.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't have a clue what other hobby I would do if it wasn't for hunting.
Right. There's
Was gonna say, especially now that I have a couple friends in Texas that have ranches or help run ranches in the off season here in Montana, I run away down there for, a week or a couple weeks at a time, and it's kind of filled in the very short off season that we have here in Montana.
So when you say your guys' off season, what is that from like February, March to like August, September, or is that how short is your guys' off season?
For most people, it would be like December through September, but I'm into the hound dogs a little bit, chasing bears and mountain lions. So that season starts in December, and then we run mountain lions from December till usually about now middle of March till all the snow melts. And then once the snow melts, it's a lot harder to hunt them. You can't find tracks in the snow. And then 2 years ago, Montana legalized running black bears during the spring season with dogs in certain areas. So now, and starting in April through May, we get to go chase bears around.
Well, that's awesome. That's something about like chasing game with dogs. It's so neat to watch a working dog just do what they enjoy doing, do what they were born to do.
Absolutely. And it doesn't matter if it's a hunting dog or a cattle dog or what it is. It's just watching any sort of dog do the job they're bred for. It's a lot of fun just to watch that natural instinct kick in and do what they're supposed to do.
So, are your bear and lion hunts, is that something like you sell as a guide, or is it just something more that you do for yourself?
It's just more we do for ourselves, and we'd help a few friends and family that, want to kill one as a bucket list item and whatnot. But we don't do any guided hunts per se.
I got you. There's nothing wrong with that. So I jokingly say I'm an avid duck hunter, but I only get out, a couple times a year, if that, for the last 2.5, 3 years. But like ducks and waterfowl are one of those things that I don't ever care to guide just because I still want to have that one thing that I can still enjoy about hunting. Not saying that I don't enjoy guiding, but there's always got to be like that one game that you're kind of learning and figuring out and chasing for yourself that you're not having to worry about putting clients on. Do you feel that way about kind of like the lions and bears?
Yeah, I'd say so, because once you start having to do hunts and you absolutely have to go do it, it starts to feel more like a job instead of just leisure and getting out, and you don't get to enjoy yourself as much when you got pressure on you that you absolutely have to go out and, get the job done. It makes
Absolutely.
it feel a little more special when you go out.
Yeah, just take a buddy out with you and like, hey man, let's go run dogs today.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I'd
Yeah,
like to one of these days I'd like
most
to
of the
come up
time,
there and go chase them.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you should.
Like even if that's just with my camera, following you guys around the mountains, following the dogs and stuff, dude, I'd eat that up.
Yeah, that's mostly what we do. It's a lot easier to pack them out on the camera.
Well, for sure.
And dead
For sure,
cats don't
like,
make more tracks.
no, they don't. You can't chase the dead ones
I know that.
anymore.
No, I know that'll piss off a lot of people, but I don't care. I like running them.
Yeah, I mean it's good exercise for the dogs. It keeps the dogs on edge, keeps them like that drive, right? Like, oh, we caught it, great. Owner's gonna pet us and like praise us, and we're gonna get excited about it, and we're gonna want to go do it again.
Yep.
Versus
And
a dog that don't know. I feel like people that own working dogs, no matter what the breed is, they've always taken better care of that animal than somebody that just has a house pet dog.
Yeah. And most of our dogs are they're hunting dogs slash house pets, so they get the best of both worlds.
It's the best of both worlds. So you've shot this year, Arizona Javelina. Where'd you guys do that one at?
We did that on the border down south of Tucson, near Patagonia.
Nice. Was that like a guided hunt, or was that just a public land? You guys drew your javelina tags there. How does that one
Yeah,
work?
that was DIY,
Okay.
public land tag. Me and the girlfriend both drew a tag. We drew the HAM tag, which stands for handgun archery muzzleloader. So we went down there with our bows and muzzleloader, and we both ended up shooting them with our or with my muzzleloader.
Oh, that's awesome. Those javelinas, man, like a lot of people are like, oh, they're kind of like pigs, but they're not really like a pig. And I see them a lot here in Texas whenever I'm guiding, but javelina are not, they're not a pig, they're not a rat, they're not a this, they're just a collared peccary. And to me, they're one of the cooler of the desert animals. You know, obviously sheep hold a very special place in my heart, but you know, desert mule deer, javelina, bighorn sheep, the desert elk varieties, the oddad. There's just something fun about chasing animals out in the wide open desert or the mountainous deserts that are across the southwest of the United States.
I agree. I grew up hunting in Montana and didn't get hunting out of state till I was in my early 20s. And once I started going down south, it's kind of in the desert areas. It definitely holds a special place in my heart going down there to hunt. I don't know if it's just something that's so different than what we have up here in Montana or what it is, but I'm always looking for an excuse to go down there, whether it's Texas or Arizona or even New
And
Mexico. I've hunted antelope down New Mexico, and that was a lot of fun as well.
those did you kind of hunt up around like the Hobbs Lovington area, or were you more kind of in the central part of New Mexico?
We were up by Raton. It's not in the northeast corner of New Mexico.
Okay, so you're up there like kind of where Texas, Colorado, and New Mexico all
Yes, sir.
touch. That's awesome. How big was your speed goat?
That was like a 72-inch goat, I think, if
That's still
I
a
remember right. That
respectable
was a,
speed goat.
yeah, that was a pretty cool hunt. I actually won that through a drawing I didn't even know I entered with the Gunworks crew. So I went down there and got to go to one of their shooting schools, or I guess they call it Long Range University. So we did that shooting school for a few days, and then we went out and got to go chase antelope at the rifles in August. So that was pretty cool. We got a really early start to hunting season.
That's awesome. What kind of tactics and stuff did you use for your speed goat? Did you guys kind of go out, drive around and spot them, and then move through a couple washes to get to them, or how did that hunt go?
Yeah, that one was mostly driving around and glassing from the pickup. And there was a little bit of terrain there with a few buttes. And it was so dang hot when we were there. It was like 100 to 104 degrees the 2 or 3 days we actually were hunting. So it was pretty miserable. So we tried to stay in the air conditioning as much as we could.
I don't blame you there. It gets hot. Like Texas, New Mexico, Arizona. You know, it's hard to describe like how hot it actually gets down here in those areas, because most people are like, oh, well, you know, New Mexico's got mountains. Yeah, well, the mountains are, you know, only a small portion of New Mexico. A majority of New Mexico is the hot, dry, arid desert. And then Arizona's even worse. Texas, you know, once you get past like, I don't know, I'd say San Angelo and west is when it really turns into that like flat desert country until you get out past Fort Stockton, and then you start seeing the Fort Davis Mountains down around Alpine, Fort Davis, in that area. So it's a lot of people come out to Texas and they hunt, and they're like, oh man, there's it's all supposed to be just flat land. I didn't realize there was mountains down here. And it's like, oh yeah, no, There's some pretty good peaks. Like we have Chinati Peak that's 70, what is it, 7,700 feet. And then you got, a couple other peaks that are just as high or a little bit higher. And it's kind of neat. Like Texas has just that wide variety of terrain features.
Yeah, they got a little bit of everything. We just drove through that West Texas country, just a couple weeks ago when we were traveling from Arizona to Texas. That was the first time I'd actually been in that part of Texas. I've been everywhere else, from the brush country and the hill country down Junction area and all that. But it was pretty cool to see those big, huge West Texas mountains.
Yeah. So whenever
Just
you came through
nothing but
Arizona,
rock.
oh yeah, no, it's just sheer scree fields and boulder fields in some of those
Yeah, I
hills.
couldn't believe it. Yeah, it's pretty cool country. Be a lot of fun to go hunt sheep down in that country.
Well, I know a
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
guy.
We'll have to get
We
met up
go.
one of these days and
Yeah.
go chase them.
We'll go chase them in the rut, man. That's to go through some of them canyons and those mesas and pop over a ridge and see 200 sheep with 5 to 10 to 15 shooter rams in that group. You're just like, hey man, I don't know which one you should shoot. Just pick the one you like the best and put the crosshairs on it and let it eat.
Yeah, pick the shape you like.
Yeah. It's a different sheep for every flavor of somebody's taste. Whether it's, the ram that's got the big chaps or great mass or length or broomed off, you're more than likely going to see something that fits your needs out there. And
Yeah. Yeah, I got one
it's
out
crazy.
ad that he's kind of tight and his tips you curl up. I think he's like 27 and a half. So he's not super long, but he's super heavy and he's just got kind of a unique shape to him. I haven't seen many sheep like that before. I'd
So
like to go out and get a real wide one.
yeah, where he like comes out and hooks. A lot of your West Texas ones, they kind of flay out and then come down and they'll still make that a little bit of a hook, but that's how I gauge a lot of my sheep is like if their horns come together in the middle pretty tight, and then those at the ends, whenever they start hooking back up, that's when I know like, all right, we're either right at or just over 30s. And occasionally like a 27, 28 will slip in there because he'll start getting that hook and he'll start coming back up towards the body as opposed to coming down towards the ground. But more times than not, that's how I judge them is whenever they make that full come up and around. Not saying that they full curl like an Alaskan doll or a stone sheep or a bighorn, but it's just whenever that hoop, those McDonald's arches come back up and under, it's like, all right, we're on a good one now.
Yeah, when I shot mine, there was that one and another one. He had the big wide look to him, but the one I ended up shooting, he was a lot heavier, and I liked that big heavy look out of the two of them.
Yeah, dude, those ones with the mass, they've got a brute look to them, and it's just like, man, like if you're looking for mass, there's your ticket right there. Whenever those bases are, you're looking through the spotting scope, right? At 800 to 1,000 yards away, glassing these sheep up, and it's just like, oh yeah, no, his bases are like an eighth of an inch or less than a quarter inch apart. He's solid, and I love it whenever they carry that mass all the way down. Past that half to three quarter mark.
Yeah, I like when they carry that mass all the way to where they're broomed off, and it's just a big old, almost a club at the end.
Oh, dude. Yeah. There was one I saw out at the ranch last year and this year. I've only ever seen him twice alive. And he wasn't real long on one side. I could never really gauge him because he didn't have another side. He only had like 6 inches to his other side, right?
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh man, like he would be the perfect sheep. Cause I've always wanted like that unique sheep, right? One that's either broke off or double broomed with heavy mass. I saw him once last year, once earlier this year. And I was like, all right, whenever I finally set out to shoot my sheep, that's the one I'm going to go after because I know he's here. And about three hunts into my season this year, I found him dead about 30 miles away from the ranch. And there's no
Oh, no
mistake in
kidding.
it. Yeah, like dead on the side of the road. I was like, oh no, there were car parts everywhere. Somebody had just hit him either that night or the night before or earlier that morning. And it was just like, oh man, like my heart was broke. But in Texas, exotics are not protected under the game laws or whatever. So lopped his head off on the side of the highway and took it to my
That's what I was just going to
taxidermist.
ask if he kept his skull.
Oh yeah, he's European mounted at the house.
I was
I'll
just going
send
to
you.
say, when you're describing him, I was going to say that would be a badass European mount, lots of character.
Yeah, well, and I've got another cape. I've got a couple spare Audad capes from previous clients that, they just wanted a European mount. And so I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to build a stand for him or a base for him and then have him mounted half body on that base and that habitat at some point in
Yeah, that'd be
time.
awesome.
Yeah. It's
Yeah, get one with some real good chaps on him and
yeah. Fine. And what's crazy about him, I mean, like I said, I could never really gauge how big he was because I didn't have another side to look at or where it kind of comes down on his body at, because I always seen him like way off in the distance or just skylined on top of one of the mesas. Whenever I finally got him back from the taxidermist, I measured him and he's like 24 on one side, on his one side. And I was like,
oh, that's
huh,
it.
yeah, just like it always threw me for a loop. He was never as big as like most people would want, but to me, he's just that real cool old warrior of a sheep, and it's not even like his 24 side was broomed off, So I guess
Right.
not that he's old, but he had a story, And I had a little bit of history with that sheep of seeing him twice out there, and then like the day I finally find him, and he's keeled over on the side of the highway.
Yeah, no, nothing beats a super old animal with a bunch of character.
Yeah, and
I take
that's
that over score for on a lot of animals.
for sure. An animal that's got like this gnarly scarred up face, or like he's missing an eye. I was guiding an Audad hunt for another ranch. Oh, what was that? 3 weeks ago from this recording, so that would have been back early February, and he had cat like I couldn't see it through the spotting scope or anything, or the binos. The client shot him at like 40 or 50 yards, but he had cataracts in one eye. Whenever I flipped him over to start caping his head out and stuff, I was like, oh, like this is freaking cool. Like he's only got one eye, and he was a 28 inch guesstimated. He was probably right around 9 or 10 years old, but he had like this gnarly scarred up face. He was all busted up. He had big ridges in his horns. He was just a cool sheep, man. Well,
Yeah,
a
sounds
pseudo
like it.
sheep. Because I'm sure I'll get ripped apart for calling Audad sheep by somebody that listens to this, and that's fine. Anybody in the Audad world, it's just kind of common terminology for them, even though all of us know they're a pseudo sheep. They're neither goat nor sheep, but it's those old gnarly ones that they always do it for me whenever I get a client that shoots one. I just think it's the coolest thing on the planet.
Yeah, I agree. Do you guys do any bow hunting for them? Or is it all rifle?
I only book rifle hunts just because they can just about guarantee shot opportunity with a rifle. I can't
Right.
always guarantee that we're going to be able to get you close enough with a bow because all that have like this crazy good eyesight. It's really hard to get on top of them close enough. That's not to say that I haven't guided a few that were 20 yards. I had one last year. We shot it at 23 yards. Had one last year. We shot it at 60, 50 to 60 yards. This one this year was at 40 to 50. So, can it be done? Yes. Does the stars have to align and everything just have to go as smooth as silk? And it takes a lot to get that to come together. But I'll
No, I
tell you
get
what,
it.
if you ever wanted to come chase one with a bow, would make it happen.
Yeah, we'll have to do that one of these days.
I've got an idea as to how to get it done. I just haven't had somebody that I've been necessarily confident that they could stick it out long enough to make it happen.
Right. Yeah, that'd be a tough hunt. It'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, because we kind of do like a base camp and then hike out every day and then hike back for dinner, go to bed, wake up, repeat the process, and just kind of keep going back and forth with it. Did you draw like your mule deer tag, your elk tag? Were you successful in any of your draws up there this year?
Yeah, I shot a nice whitetail with my bow, and I shot a cow elk on a general tag. I wasn't even really hunting. I just went up to go glass, took my one hound dog up and just went for a little walk. And I was glassing around, and there's really not supposed to be elk in this area, or not, shouldn't say there's not supposed to be any. You just don't see elk in this area, and I'm just glassing around and enjoying the super nice evening. And all of a sudden, I was like, "Is that an elk?" I was kind of walking through the brush, and like, "Holy smokes, it is!" So me and the dog, we sprinted back to the Jeep, and I loaded him up, and I grabbed my bow and just sprinted down maybe half a mile and got in the willows, and I just hunkered down once I ran out of cover, and she ended up walking by me at like 53 yards, and I stuck her. So it wasn't too exciting, a very exciting hunt, but can't pass up the low-hanging fruit.
No, so not very often can you pass up the low-hanging fruit, especially like elk meat is one of my favorite things to eat. I've never personally shot one, but I've had either clients or friends or stuff like that have shot one, and I've gotten to have a little bit of their to enjoy a few spoils of their hard work and labor. And it's anytime you can fill the freezer with like elk, mule deer, whitetail, it's always a good thing.
Yeah, and up where I am, it's all flat ground. It's flat as a pancake. So all those deer, they just camp out on pea and wheat fields all summer long, and our archery season starts right after harvest. So a lot of them animals, they've been eating some of the leftover grains. So when you kill an animal during archery in my country, it's usually really, really good eating.
Oh yeah, because they're eating stuff that's like high in nutrients, high in fat, which helps them pack it on for the winter, but that also in turn helps them, yeah, I don't know, it just kind of makes the meat a little better in my opinion.
Yeah, it's all, they're almost grain fed, kind of like a beef.
Yeah.
There, a few years
What's
ago, I shot an antelope on a pea field, and at least in our country, the antelope, they don't pack much fat on them. And when we were processing this goat, it had probably like a half inch of fat on it, and it was yellow like a beef from camping out on that pea field, and that was probably one of the best eaten animals I've ever eaten.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was crazy. My family, growing up, we had a wild game processing shop, and it was my dad and his parents. So my dad's skinned and helped butcher, thousands and thousands of animals, and he said he'd never seen anything like that before on an antelope. It was delicious.
But you kind of hear mixed reviews about antelope meat. Some people say it's really, really good, and some people say it's like god awful. What has been your experience with the antelope you've shot? Is it obviously you enjoy antelope meat, but do you notice different places that you shoot them have almost a different flavor, or are they kind of the same across the board and some people just don't know how to properly care for their meat in the field?
Yeah, all the antelope up in my country where I live, I don't know if I've really had a bad one, but that goat I killed in New Mexico, it wasn't very good eating though down there. I think all the agriculture fields up where I live, I think that is a big factor in the flavor of the meat versus that goat I killed down in New Mexico. It was all pasture land and sage down. So I think that is kind of a reflection of, the country and the food it was eating down there.
I got you. That's
But yeah, antelope's one of my, at least in the areas we shoot them, that's probably my favorite game meat.
kind of reverting back to your marcor. Did you have him processed?
I saved a little bit of the meat, yeah, and then some of the guys at the ranch, it stayed there, but I brought back a little bit. I haven't got to eat it yet, but I'm looking forward to trying it.
Yeah, I had a client that shot one a few years ago. And he was just kind of there to shoot the markhor and go home, right? Like he didn't want to spend a whole lot of days chasing one. He wanted a very specific one. He wanted to get it done because he had an appointment to be back to at home the next day. So he flies in, we hunt it, he flies out. But while I'm skinning it, he's like, "Hey, if you want the meat, just take it home with you. Cape him out for a full body, take him to your taxidermist, have your taxidermist ship it to mine." I was like, "Okay, like I've never had markhor before." And dude, that's like That is some pretty good meat. Like I would throw
Is
that up
it?
there with, yeah, I'd throw that up there with just about anything. It's pretty damn tasty.
Yeah, I'm excited to try it.
Yeah. And so
Is
your
it
more
more of
core.
like a, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say your more core is a it's a cashmere markhor, and there's a few different subspecies. And I think out of all of them, like the cashmere has always been one of my favorite, with a Soleimani being a close second. But
Yeah,
what were you asking about
those are
the
my two favorite.
what's up?
Oh, I said those are my two favorite of the markhor subspecies as well. But I was going to ask on the markhor meat, was it more of a, kind of like that lamb type meat, or what? How would you describe it, or is it kind of its own thing?
I'm trying to think of like what it would be closest to. It didn't have that lamb texture, flavor, or smell to it. It's a tender, like even as old as the one that I shot was, or not I shot, but that my client shot and I got the meat from. It was just super tender, like almost melt in your mouth. A venison tenderloin. Or it was just kind of that texture. Like it was just super light, but filling and rich all at the same time.
Yeah, I noticed on the back straps when I was handling them, it seemed like it would be a tender meat.
Yeah, and it's not like, a Wagyu beef where somebody's out there massaging those things. Those things are as wild as they get.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how spooky that Markhor Billy was.
Dude, whenever, I don't know, whenever I do. So, backstory to your markhor, you and I have talked about it, but I darted that markhor and delivered it to 6S, oh, shit, 2 years ago. Almost 2 years ago. Maybe even longer than that. But,
Yeah, I think it might have even been longer than that.
yeah, it came off of a ranch that had a markhor, kind of a turnout pen. So that guy, he's his ranch hand or his ranch manager separates the billies from the nannies whenever they're weaned. And then the billies, the prospective like trophy class billies, get put into their own section of the ranch. And it's not a giant area. You have to kind of herd them. It's, I want to say it was like a 20 or 30 acre, separation pen, basically. That was away from the nanny, so this way they wouldn't try to jump the fence or anything like that. All they've ever known is kind of their billy buddies. So you'd have to get into that subsection and push them. You'd have to close one gate and push them into an area. And then somebody's got, it's really a three-man job, but we made it happen with two that day. But you push them all into this smaller pen and you pull the gate shut. And then somebody's sitting there with a dart gun waiting for them, waiting for the one that you need to dart to step out by itself. And then you dart it, give it a few minutes, let it go to sleep from the medication. And then you haul butt and drive your truck and trailer in there, back it up to the gate, let all the rest of the markhor out, and you go scoop your one up, reverse him, load him in the trailer, and then take off. Well, I got to put my hands on your Billy when he was like 24 to 26 inches at the time. And I'll let you tell everybody how big he was when you shot him, but like I couldn't believe how much he's grown in the amount of time that he's been at 6S.
Yeah, he was 32 and a half when we ended up killing him.
Just a giant. And to see one, so markhor are notorious for locking horns and breaking the tips off. Yours, from what I could tell in the pictures, he didn't break hardly anything off.
No, he might have a maybe an inch busted on the one side and probably less on the other. He's not really broomed off, he's just rounded off.
Yeah, because they'll take their horns and they'll rub it in the dirt. They'll kind of plant their forehead into the dirt and they'll rub them tips down. For whatever reason they do that, I don't know. I noticed that on a lot of the ones that were on that ranch, though, that their tips were either broke off or they were rubbed down. And some were more than the others and some were less, but your Billy, like, he is one of those pristine, just perfect specimens.
Yeah, you don't see them that symmetrical in Texas very often. I mean, you do, but you see a lot of, kind of asymmetrical, goofy looking billies. So that was one thing that stood out about that billy is the curl and the symmetry.
Yeah, and he kind of loosely spirals. So you'll get some that are like real tight, or at the tips they'll kind of come together. But his, like, he curves up and just goes straight up.
Yeah, he's a very nice looking billy. I'm super happy with him.
I love it, man. Tell me about your bare bones skull works. What do you guys do there?
So yeah, I do mostly European mounts. I do a little bit of antler restoration and recoloring and some of that. But yeah, I do European mounts. I use the Dermested beetles. So I don't do any boiling or anything. I've never been a fan of the boiling. There's always a little bit of, tissue left over from that. And the beetles, they don't miss a morsel. And so I do that as my side gig. I work for the railroad as my full-time job. And my bare bone skull work company, that's most of my hunting money and for all my big hunts anyways. But what allows me to go do a lot of them.
Yeah. So how big is your beetle colony?
Man, I honestly couldn't really give a good guess. They say to do a deer head in less than 24 hours, you need like 20 to 30,000 bugs, and I can do two or three heads in that time. So times that by three, six, I could have 60 to 100,000 bugs.
Golly.
It's pretty crazy. You put a head in there, you got to blow the brains out and trim up a bunch of the excess meat and take the eyeballs out. And the better job you do prepping it, the better product you get in the very end. So when I do it, I'm giving them a fairly trimmed up skull. But yeah, they just fly right through them.
That's crazy.
So
So
yeah, it's kind of cool. You drop a head in there and then you can look, if I put one in there early in the morning, I can go check on it after dinner before I go to bed, and the whole outside of it's pretty much clean. It's just bone, and they're still working inside the nose, around all the nasal cavity and whatnot.
I
And
get
they're
and
super cool. They're so delicate and they do such a good job. The end product, you get all the nasal bones intact versus if you boil it, most of the time all those bones, they fall out or they're busted up really bad.
yeah, it's kind of like having a bunch of free employees that they just eat dead stuff all the time.
Yeah. And they're picky eaters, man.
Yeah.
They aren't like a maggot. Most people think you can just throw anything in there, they'll clean it up, but they don't like rotten meat. They're pretty picky. The fresher, the better for them.
What made you decide to do those instead of, like what most people would call the more conventional way of boiling them or macerating them? What made you decide to go with the beetles? Because beetles aren't necessarily cheap, and they're not the easiest to maintain either. They're very
No,
susceptible to temperature fluctuations, to light, different stuff like that.
yep, they are. So growing up, I had mentioned that my family had a wild game processing shop, and a friend of my dad, he had bugs, and he'd had a beetle company. And growing up, I was out there all the time, especially during hunting season, because we gave him, a ton of business. We'd take heads from our processing shop out there. So I grew up going out there and was always, super interested in it. When I got to high school, I'd go out there and help him skin heads and, after school in the evenings and whatnot. So that's what really got me interested in it, is when I actually started doing it. And the guy's name was John, and a few, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, he passed away, and I wasn't able to take over all of his stuff right away. It was like a year and a half later I got into it, but I still kept in touch with his wife and his two boys. They helped me get into it, and they gave me a lot of, all of John's old stuff that he had for the business. So I was able just to kind of, even though it was like a year and a half gap, I was kind of able to take it over.
That's awesome. You're kind of forwarding his legacy of what he started.
Yeah, that's what I always say. I'm keeping Johnny's legacy alive.
That's awesome, man. I love to hear that. What so kind of tell me the benefits of maybe European mounting something versus getting it full blown taxidermied, right? Shoulder mounts, half bodies, pedestal, etc. What are the benefits of doing a European mount on a trophy, and then kind of what are your pricing and how to, yeah, just how, what are the benefits
Biggest
to it,
thing
and then
is
what's your
cost.
pricing to do it? Yeah.
Yeah, the biggest thing is cost for most people. I charge $140 for a deer antelope sized animal, and I include a wall hanger with it. I have a little metal wall bracket that I drew up myself and I have made. So that's the biggest thing of that, and they don't take up as much room on the walls. You can have three, four deer heads in a spot that one shoulder mount would take up. And then another part of it, I have a lot of people, or I shouldn't say a lot of people, I have a few guys, they might shoot a big, huge animal while they're waiting for their cape to be tanned because they're going to get it shoulder mounted. I'll bug their skull. That way they can still hang it on the wall for the time being. So they get to look at it and have it on the wall until their taxidermist is ready to put it on a form and put hair on it.
Pretty cool idea. A lot of people, I feel a lot of people do that with, like, obviously you can do that with pig skulls, right? Javelina, bob, or not just pigs, but pigs, predators, stuff like that. So if you take a big pig that you shoot, right? Like, say you shoot a 250-pound boar here in Texas, and you still want to have the European mount to look at while your animal's getting mounted. It does make sense to kind of do both, because you can put that either with the mount if you do like a half body or something with a habitat, or you can just hang the skull on the wall next to the mount and be like, hey, this is, his head, and this is him finished out. That's a pretty cool idea, especially with, the predators. I've always thought, like, mountain lions, bobcats, wolves, coyotes, badgers, all those. Like, I don't understand why a lot of people throw those skulls away, because even if you're not going to hang it up in the house, there is a market out there for cleaned skulls, and people pay a good chunk of change for that kind of stuff.
They do. During my off season, I have a couple guys that trap, and they're big into thermal coyote hunting. They save me a lot of their skulls for bug food during my off season, which is usually pretty short, but it helps keep my bugs fed. And then I'll clean those skulls, and I do sell some of them, so it's a little extra income during the off season, and it keeps the bugs all fired up for the fall to come around.
If I had a client that wanted to shoot, or that shot, an oddhead or an axis, a fallow, a coyote, a bobcat, a badger, whatever, and they wanted to send it maybe up to you, do you accept those types of animals from out of state, or are you allowed to accept those types of animals from out of state?
With the CWD stuff on all the deer and stuff, you have to have the brain removed to bring it into the state. That's usually pretty simple to do. So I do get some guys that send me stuff from out of state that I do. And it's always fun working on that stuff because I don't, like the pigs and whatnot. We don't have those up here in Montana, so it's fun to work on the different stuff. You get kind of burnt out working on the same whitetail and mule deer, for 9 months straight. So
I'm sure.
all that different stuff, I'm always excited to get.
Yeah, work on something different. It keeps you entertained, might not be the right word for it, but it keeps you it kind of keeps you enjoying it a little bit just to do something different. It's like, oh shit, like I'm getting to do a pig this week. I haven't done one of those in 4 or 5 months or whatever the time frame might be.
Yep, absolutely.
It's awesome.
Yeah,
What?
like when we got back from our Arizona and Texas trip, I got to work on, or I've started to work on our javelina skulls and everything. So that's always fun to do. And did my mark for, and then my girlfriend shot a big old pig down there at my buddy Tucker's ranch with her bow. So I did that, and she fined it with her bow. So we took out the part of spine that with the broadhead stuck in it, and I beetled that up. So we got that chunk of spine with the broadhead stuck in it. But so that's a pretty cool
Sweet.
little piece. Super cool conversation piece.
It's if you hunt long enough, you're gonna have like those oh shit moments or those whoops moments, And so it's kind of neat to like not necessarily take that so much to heart because a spine shot is still very much fatal. It's that follow-up shot, that next shot that's really gonna do them in. But it's kind of cool to have like that little bit of a different piece of that hunt. Because everybody looks for the heads or everybody looks for the antlers for hunts, but just to have like that little, like you said, that piece of vertebrae with the broadhead stuck into it, I could see how that's definitely a conversation starter.
Yeah, I think it's like probably a four piece, or 4 pieces of vertebrae, and I got it all glued back together. So yeah, it's not just the one vertebrae that the broadhead stuck in. Yeah, it was pretty cool, but
Nice.
and I've never seen a pig drop like that, man. I've seen a lot of pigs get shot. I go down and help my friend Tucker once or twice a year. I'll help him go guide down there on his place. He's got a hunt ranch, so I've seen quite a few pigs get shot, and even with a rifle, I don't think I've ever seen a pig drop like that. I don't know. She's probably 200, 225 pounds, and I've never seen a big old pig drop like that. Arrow dropped her.
That's crazy. So did that pig like kind of do the whole like legs tuck up and just plant down, or did it like do the squat and scoot?
Soon as that arrow hit it, the ass end fell, and she just tipped over, and that was it.
That's awesome. What? Because you hunt, I would say you hunt more than the average person that may listen to this, right? You're always looking for your next adventure. What is
Yep.
that next bucket list item, or what is that next hunt that you and your girlfriend maybe have planned, and where do you see yourself crossing off bucket list items over the next few years?
We don't have anything set in stone as of right now. The last week or so, we've been talking to a guy over in Turkey. We're pretty close to probably sending a deposit on a Bezoar ibex hunt
Awesome.
over there, and that'll be with Shikar Safaris when we go, more than likely. And then we were talking a little bit earlier about Muntjac. There is also a guy in England we've been talking to about going over to England and hunting Muntjac and Chinese water deer.
Awesome. Those are Muntjac are such wild looking little animals, man. They've got
They
these
are.
big oh they're almost they're scent glands, some kind of gland on the top of their head that they can flex in and out, and they almost look like aliens when they do it. It's if nobody's ever seen the videos of a Muntjac like flexing his little glands, man, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people, they know the scent glands below the eyes on like a mule deer, and on a muntjac, it's a lot like a mule deer's scent gland under their eye, but probably 2 or 3 times the size of that on an animal that's what, 20, 25 pounds.
Yeah. They're little bitty dudes.
Yeah, and it's
I would
crazy.
say
Yeah,
they're
they can.
close to the size of a duiker.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen a muntjac in person, to be honest. So I've just seen lots of pictures and videos of them. So I've never seen one in person to gauge exactly how small they really are.
Next time you come to Texas, call me and I will, or next time you plan on coming to Texas, call me. I'll make a couple phone calls. I know a small couple places that have them or had them at one point in time, and they could probably tell me where there's a good herd of them. And they're such
Oh, cool.
an odd animal.
Have you ever shot one?
I have not. I've been, oh, I don't know, a couple feet from them on one ranch. They kind of had like a kind of like a little dog run in their backyard that had a breeding pair of muntjac that they were trying to get established and up and running. But that's as close as I've ever been to one.
Okay.
Like I have,
Yeah,
I
there.
took my camera over there and took some pictures of him, of the, I'm not even sure what to call. I would assume the males are called bucks. Muntjac are something I know next to nothing about, other than they're the coolest looking little animals on the planet.
Yeah, same
But
here.
what's up?
Well, I said, yeah, same here. I don't know much about them, but they're cool. They got just little itty bitty horns, maybe a few inches, and then they got fangs too, which is
Yeah,
pretty wild.
they look like they're from another damn planet. Like they don't
Yeah.
belong here, is how they look. It's like, yeah, that should not be on this planet. That should be way off in some other solar system.
Especially when they blow up those scent glands.
Oh, dude, it's wild. Like the one I took pictures of, he kept flexing his. And I was like, what? Like, why are you doing this? Stop it. You weird me out.
Yeah, for the listeners that
So,
haven't seen that, yeah, they definitely got to look that up. They'll be
yeah,
blown away.
it's wild. So has your girlfriend, have you guys been together for a while or?
Yeah, we've been together for like 2.5 years now.
Did she hunt before you guys got together, or did you kind of introduce her into the hunting world?
No, she was pretty big into hunting before. She just hunted around Montana, though she'd never been out of state to hunt. So the last couple years, she's got to get out of state, and we've got to do a little bit of hunting, and she's really enjoyed it.
That's what's
C
when you
created a
find.
monster. Now she's want. She, I took her out of state. Now she's really nagging to go overseas and go do a hunt, which is fine with me because I've been wanting to do one for a long time. I just needed someone, not only just to kind of go with, but someone to be like, yep, let's do it, give you that little push.
Yeah, you need a yes man whenever it comes time to book hunts. It's cool dating somebody that is also as involved into hunting as you are, right? Because
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
it you can share that passion with the person you're with. You know, it's different for like if you and I ever linked up and we decided to go hunt, right? That's cool. That's badass. Like two buddies just out grinding out and hunting. But there's something special about the person that you can see yourself with potentially for the rest of your life going out and hunting with you. It kind of builds a different type of bond. Whenever you're out in the mountains and you're struggling through it makes you realize that the problems back at home are just small problems that you guys can, if you guys can work through the mountains or work through the problems that you face during a hunt, you can get through just about anything together.
Yep, I agree.
And it's a relief because in today's world, like I feel a lot of people, they date because it's what can I get out of being with this person? You know, some people are seen as financial gains, some people are seen as emotional gains or whatever other aspect, right? Like we're not gonna, this isn't a dating podcast by any stretch of the imagination, but having a healthy relationship in the hunting world does help because I hear a lot of clients complain about their wives or their significant others about how like, you know, I booked this hunt and then I told my wife about it. Now she's pissed off because I'm out here for 5 days with no service, or I'm not even going to turn my phone on while I'm out here. Da, 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 da. I'm like, dude, that's not a relationship for me. I want zero part in that. I want, you know, the person I'm with to be like, oh yeah, like go grind it out, go have fun, like send me pictures whenever you can or call me whenever you can and let me know how it's going. And that's, I just couldn't. Now that I've dated somebody in the hunting industry, the hunting world, I can't ever see myself going back to somebody who doesn't hunt. While we both do hunt and we both have our own things that we like to hunt, we both enjoy hunting together.
Yep. Yeah, and it's nice when you say you're going hunting. It's usually, oh, can I go too? I want to shoot one,
Yeah, I want to
Like,
tag along. Let me go with you.
let's go.
Yo, it's like get in the truck. Truck's leaving in 20 minutes. Pack your shit. Let's go.
Yeah, guaranteed hunting partner.
Yo. Well, man, it's I think we're closing in on that 1 hour mark. Where can people that are listening kind of find you, find your European mount company, and how can people get a hold of you, like if they want a mount or if they have questions about maybe hunting in Montana, you know, because and it's, so Texas, we don't really have a draw system for most things. We do have a draw for like our bighorn tags. There's a couple other, like our alligator tags and some other select exotic hunts. But how can people, like, if somebody has questions or if somebody wants to connect with you, follow you on your social medias and stuff like that, how can they get a hold of you?
My personals are on both Facebook and Instagram, just my name, Colton Bender. And then my business page is Bare Bones Skullworks on both Facebook and Instagram. I don't post a whole lot on my Instagram for my business page. I do mostly on Facebook, but I probably post more of my personal stuff and hunts on Instagram. So you can check both those pages out. And yeah, if anyone's interested in info on coming up here to hunt or anything, get a hold of me. And if you're interested in hunting in Texas too, get a hold of me or Austin. We can both get you pointed in the right direction somewhere, probably for no matter what it is.
Love it, man. It's been awesome having you on because, like, the whole mission for this show is to connect clients with outfitters, ranch owners, taxidermists, other people in the industry to show them, like, not only can anybody get into this industry and hunt, and more of just building the hunting community back together. Is my one podcast going to do it? No. But by having a community of people listening and tuning in and engaging, we can all build the hunting community back up to what it used to be, where it wasn't so much about, like, oh, what's the age and score of this deer, but like hunting what makes you happy, hunting wherever makes you happy, as long as it's legal and ethical. You know, that's really the kind of the goal and the drive of this. The reason why I want to do this podcast so bad, and you know, to have people like you come on and talk about your experiences with other ranches and other hunts, and maybe that will inspire somebody to go out and be like, well, hell, man, I've always wanted to hunt Montana. You know, I'm gonna get a hold of Colton and, like, I'm gonna see what it takes to draw for some of these items or some of these animals that I want to hunt.
Yep, absolutely. I agree. There's a lot of bullshit out there now, but yeah, there's the few real guys out there. Yeah, get a hold of them. Don't be afraid to ask questions. And if it makes you happy, do it. I don't care what anyone says. If it's legal, it's legal.
As long as it's legal and as long as, you know, the client or, you know, the hunter is happy with it. I mean, I think that's all that should matter to anybody in this industry. You know, do we want to call out, like, the people that are poaching or the people that are shooting illegal game? Or I guess that's both one and the same. If you're hunting somewhere you're not supposed to be, you know, do we want to call those people out and say, hey, man, like, this shit's not cool. We're already under fire as a hunting community as it is. Like, knock that shit off. Absolutely. But we also want to lift up the people that are out there hunting and doing it the right way.
Yeah, I can set couldn't have said it better.
Yes, sir. Well, man, I'm gonna let you go. It's getting late down here, and I know you got dinner and some other things you got to get to tonight, but I really appreciate having you on, man. It's been a blast. Like, just kind of hanging
Yeah,
out
thanks for
and
inviting me
having a
on.
conversation.
Yeah, let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely.
Maybe
Like,
after my next trip down there, maybe we can get met up and go hunting and we can do a follow-up on it.
yeah, dude, that'd be great. Like, have, you know, if your girlfriend comes down, have all three of us just kind of get together somewhere and, you know, record an in-person episode and just kind of hang out and shoot the shit.
I do a campfire story.
Oh, dude, I'm in for that. You come down to the
Yeah.
mountains anytime you want to, man. I'll start a campfire and we'll
Heck
sleep in the wall tent.
yeah, that'd be awesome. I'm down there almost every February or March in that time frame usually. So yeah, let's get met up and let's do it.
Let's
Well, we'll
put
see
something
if we can
together,
get an
man.
outad. Let's see if we can get a big ol' outad with a bow.
Hey, if you're willing to try it, I'm willing to put in the work. I'll put it to you that
That works for me, man.
way. Awesome, brother. Well, we'll catch you later. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Austin. I appreciate it.